Thank you. This is great. I think it flows really nicely from the previous presentation. I'm presenting work that I did in for my dissertation, and I just graduated in May and started a postdoctoral fellow, so I am new. And actually, as part of the larger picture, I did look also at early childhood adversity and kind of social disadvantage and how that fit into this picture, looking at psychological functioning as the mediator. But for this presentation, I'm focusing on this piece of looking at psychological functioning across the life course, predicting cardiometabolic risk at in adulthood. And I have no disclosures. So cardiovascular diseases such as heart disease and stroke and metabolic diseases such as diabetes are leading causes of morbidity and mortality worldwide. And the burden of disease is predicted to increase with increased prevalence at younger ages. And in part, because of this, cardiovascular medicine is looking more at childhood predictors of and childhood factors that are relevant for heart disease in adulthood, but still the focus remains on health behaviors. So it's looking at obesity in childhood and physical inactivity, and less looking at psychological factors and how that might contribute. But in a converging trend, life course epidemiology is highlighting the childhood origins of adult disease with a bit more of a focus on the social and psychological factors. And there is a growing body of evidence suggesting that some of the pathologic processes and risk factors that are associated with the development of cardiometabolic diseases do begin early in life and may depend to some extent upon psychological functioning across the lifespan. Some of the pathways, which we already heard about earlier, and I'll just touch on briefly, is it could be both indirect and direct mechanisms at play, primarily in sort of the behavioral or biological realms. So with the experience of stress, there's the triggering activation of the HPA axis and the sympathetic nervous system, release of cortisol and catecholamines and the stress hormones, and which initially are adaptive and kind of promote a fight or flight response, but with chronic distress, there's wear and tear on the system and compromised elasticity of the system. And some research suggests that early childhood distress can almost get programmed into macrophages through epigenetic markings and tissue remodeling. So there's a lot that to suggest that if dysregulation happens early, it may be harder to alter later and may kind of set people up for more to experience more reactivity and have more cumulative effects. So, oh, and then also there's indirect. So poor psychological functioning might increase likelihood of engaging in what we consider unhealthy behaviors like smoking, sedentary lifestyle, poor diet, et cetera, and even affecting relationships, education, and occupational attainment. So there is quite a lot of research showing a correlation between psychological functioning, which is typically kind of captured as emotional distress, and cardiovascular disease, but a lot of it is cross-sectional, so we can't really disentangle the direction of the effect of that relationship. And as the previous speaker did point out, there's not a lot of longitudinal studies that look at these aspects. So one way people have started to look at, especially in younger populations, to look at risk of disease is to look at biomarkers that would indicate that someone is at risk of having cardiovascular metabolic disease without having manifest disease at that time. And there is evidence, I'll get that out of the way, that's showing that most of the work has looked at depression and markers of inflammation in adulthood. C-reactive protein is one of the key ones that's been looked at. Oh, pardon me. But other biomarkers have been looked at, and most of this, like I said, is cross-sectional, so we can't really get at direction of effects. But in one of the few longitudinal studies or prospective studies to look at this association, this was a study by Appleton et al., found that poor emotional functioning at age 7 was associated with higher levels of C-reactive protein at age 42. Again, this is really an interesting finding, but we only had a sort of single snapshot measure of psychological functioning. So the question remains whether this cardiometabolic sort of alterations result from a childhood limited exposure or whether they're due to more ongoing exposure with poor functioning across the life course. And so to get at those types of questions, we really want to be able to see how, track people across time and see how they're looking over time. And it's possible that some of the associations we're seeing by the time people are in adulthood and these elevated biomarkers in these populations, it could be a reflection of biologic damage set in place early in life or attributable to this cumulative ill psychological health across the life course. So this last question here, question about does the impact of poor psychological functioning in childhood persist even if sort of well-being is attained in adulthood? We haven't really been able to answer. So that's the question that we set out to look at. And we used data from the National Child Development Study, which some people may know of as the 1958 British Birth Cohort Study. It's a large population cohort of people born in 1958. Good title for the study, in the UK. And they are followed through. They're continued to be followed, but I used data up until they turned 45. And there were 6 waves of follow-up. And at each of these time points, there is a measure of psychological functioning. And then at age 45, the surviving sample was invited to participate in a biomedical survey. And that's where blood samples were taken, blood pressure, and that's where my outcome measures come from. This sample is 50% female, mostly white, which just reflects the UK in 1958. And my analytic sample is those who completed the biomedical survey and at least one measure of psychological functioning in childhood and at least one in adulthood. And this is just showing how we lose so many people from the beginning until now, which is common and one of the sort of downsides of longitudinal studies, and hard to avoid. So the measures of psychological functioning at age 7 and 11, the measure they use is the Bristol Social Adjustment Guide, and at age 16, the Rutter Behavior Scale. And both of these are teacher-reported measures that capture symptoms of internalizing and externalizing disorders. So kind of for internalizing, capturing symptoms that might be related with anxiety or depression, and for externalizing, it's more conduct disorder, inattention, hyperactivity. And then in adulthood, it's called the malaise inventory, and it's measuring, it's self-reported measures of psychological distress. So we have similar issues of there's so much information, which is why it's great, but then how do you kind of put it into a way that you can tell a story with it and not just look at everything? And so we looked at it a lot of ways, and what I'm going to present is where we created these profiles, but basically if people were in this sort of high-risk group, which was defined, which has been commonly used in these scales and in this sample, if they were in the top 13% of the scores, that we were considered to have poor functioning, and if they had 5 or more symptoms on these adult scales, they were considered to have poor functioning. We also did keep these as continuous measures to get a sense of severity. And based on that, those cut points I mentioned, we created profiles. So if people had no high risk or no poor functioning at any time point in childhood, and none at any of those 3 time points in adulthood, so basically never had it, they were considered to have satisfactory psychological functioning across the life course, and that's our reference group. If they had poor functioning that was restricted to the childhood years and not in adulthood, then they were in the childhood-only group. And conversely, no poor functioning in childhood, but poor psychological functioning at any time in adulthood, they were in the adulthood only, and then if they had it both times, they were in the persistent group. And the outcome is a measure of cardiometabolic risk, and here we took a summary score of 9 relevant biomarkers across the immune, metabolic, and cardiovascular system. And again, there's lots of ways you could look at this. What we took a standardized Z-score approach. So we each biomarker, we standardized to have a mean of 0 and a standard deviation of 1, and then we summed that to create an overall score. And one of the benefits of this approach is that the weight of each biomarker can differ depending on the deviation from the sample's mean, and so it retains a bit more information than if you dichotomize to just a high risk. And also, because having just a small, let's say a minor difference in risk across multiple systems and biomarkers might indicate meaningful difference in disease risk, even if you never, you know, cross the high blood pressure cut point. So it kind of is capturing what's going on in more systems. These are the covariates that we adjusted for that could be associated both with psychological functioning and increased cardiovascular risk. The adulthood variables we considered to be more mediators of the effect, but we did control for them in some analyses to see if to see what was going on there. And I won't spend too much time there, but if you have questions about that. So the primary analyses, we used SAS to run our analyses, and the main analyses were just linear regression models, looking at the profiles, but also the summary scores that we created. Because we do have a not insignificant number of missing, we used multiple imputation for missing covariate values, and to deal with the potential for attrition, bias due to attrition, we weighted analyses by the inverse of the likelihood that someone was going to make it to the end. And we also did a number of sensitivity analyses that I probably won't have time to talk about. So this is just the framework showing this life course and where we, at what time we have the measures. And I didn't look at the early literacy in this piece of the project, but it's also in there. So this is what the sample looked like. About half of the sample had satisfactory functioning across the life course. A quarter had poor functioning that was limited to childhood. 15% had poor psychological functioning in adulthood only. And then 11% had persistently poor functioning across the life course. So just looking at, this is the results. When we looked at how this was associated with cardiometabolic risk, we found that those with poor functioning in childhood only, adulthood only, or persistent across the life course all were at significantly increased cardiometabolic risk compared to the satisfactory group. For childhood only and persistent, this was highly significant. And to interpret this a little bit, the outcome is in this population standard deviation of cardiometabolic risk. So those in the persistently poor group had almost a quarter of a standard deviation higher risk than those in the satisfactory group. And this is adjusting for all the childhood covariates that I mentioned, plus whether people were taking cardiovascular endocrine medicines in adulthood. When we added the adult covariates, these effect sizes were slightly attenuated, and actually the adulthood only group was attenuated to non-significance. But the childhood-only and persistent groups remained significant even when adjusting for these kind of known risk factors of heart disease like smoking and poor diet and SDS in adulthood. So, I don't know if you can see clearly here. So the part that I showed was just this little part of the model here. And you can see that it remains significant when we add the adult covariates. But I also just wanted to point out, because sometimes seeing effect estimates is sort of like, well, is this meaningful? What does a 0.24 thing really mean? When you compare it to more kind of traditional or starting to be known risk factors, you can see being overweight in childhood was associated with 0.13 increased risk. And so poor functioning in childhood only was almost comparable to poor psychological function. Oh, gosh. Okay. There. So basically, it's important. and even when you look at smoking, which we know is associated with higher risk, it's in line with some of these. Okay. So let's just jump to, I don't think it's surprising that those with persistently poor psychological functioning had higher risk of cardiometabolic disease in adulthood. But this is one of the first studies to suggest that poor functioning in childhood alone, even if it remits or by adulthood, still leaves a lasting cardiometabolic risk. I know, which is now there are limitations, so there might be some things to suggest. You know what we can't. I don't know if any of these people had therapy or had a really powerful relationship. We don't have any of measures, unfortunately, on positive factors. So there might be a subset who dealt with issues and then actually are looking fine. And so, but I think this is interesting to consider the potential lasting impact of childhood psychological functioning on adult health and ask these questions about reversibility. And is it possible that some physiology kind of gets set in place and it becomes harder to address the further the older people get. Because the adult factors didn't fully attenuate the associations, it suggests that there might be both biological and behavioral pathways at play. And the really, I think, kind of take-home message is we really need to pay attention to childhood well-being, childhood psychological functioning. It's very important, but don't give up on these kids, you know, because if they continue to have sustained problems, they're only going to increase risk of cardiometabolic disease. I don't have much time to talk about the limitations. No, I just will say, like I said, we don't have the positive factors. We didn't have comparable measures across time. It's observational, so again, we can't really talk about causality, and there was a lot of attrition. But as you can see by the larger, bolder font, the strengths really outweigh the limitations. The prospective design is really the biggest strength of this, and then there are a few other ones there. I think a critical next step is, because this is observational, and because research does suggest that childhood psychological functioning is modifiable, a next step would be to evaluate using longitudinal RCTs whether preventing or improving poor functioning in childhood really does lead to improved health behaviors and decreased risk. And in tandem, I think we should start exploring, and people have started to do this, looking at biomarkers in childhood to see how early we might be able to see this risk development, and also to understand if we can track, you know, if we can detect risk early and if it is sustained over time. And then also, like I said, really looking at some of the positive aspects that weren't measured in this study, so we can identify protective factors that could be strengthened and increased. So everyone, I think, knows this, we're in the mental health section, that poor psychological functioning in and of itself is a serious public health issue demanding of attention. And I, framing it in this way, it's sort of to speak to people interested in adult chronic disease prevention who might not think to pay attention to these factors, and that the sort of, if we're thinking of more primordial prevention of adult disease, we would be remiss not to consider what's going on, not only earlier in the life course, but looking at what's happening in terms of mental well-being or the lack of that. So I think this helps to identify the time, the period of childhood, but also psychological functioning as a potentially novel intervention for preventing heart disease and stroke and diabetes. And the hope is that this type of research can, we can kind of shift some of the focus from looking at these more proximal causes of smoking and diet and health behaviors, and shift our attention in intervention and policy earlier in the life course. That was my fancy PowerPoint move. to addressing social and psychological conditions, and then offsetting, I hope, these trajectories that lead to increased risk. I wanted to thank my dissertation committee and my advisor, Laura Kozanski, and also funding that I received at the Harvard Center on the Developing Child and the School of Public Health. Thank you.